Alors pour une heure et demie, on va examiner la situation des homosexuels et lesbiennes dans les pays annexés ou occupés par l'Allemagne nazie. J'ai à côté de moi Johan, je n'arrive pas à prononcer son nom de famille. Johan travaille pour l'Université de Vienne. Et il n'est pas encore professeur, mais il est assistant. Et il est en train de devenir et il a beaucoup travaillé son doctorat et consacré sur la construction de la féminité, de la masculinité homosexuelle. Je suis désolée si je suis en train de traduire votre doctorat de l'anglais, dans les procédures criminelles, à peu près. Et donc, il va nous présenter la situation des lesbiennes et homosexuelles en Autriche.
Okay. Better? Yes, this project aims to collect data on all existing data on the persecution of gays and lesbians in Vienna during the Nazi period. This project is the most recent scholarly contribution to a debate in Vienna, which started many years ago about the memorial for victims of the Nazi regime who were persecuted as homosexuals, but more on that in the afternoon. Allow me to start with an aspect which seems at first sight negligible, but will lead right into the core of our topic today. In the case of Austria, the term annexation is more suitable than the term occupation. The term occupation conceals the responsibility Austrian society refused to bear for so many years. A vast majority of Austrians welcomed the Nazis and became or were already Nazis themselves. Reflections on historical responsibility for Nazi crimes do not solely belong into the field of politics. They are an important prerequisite of historical research because they lead to a decision over the perspective historical research takes on a certain subject. When Austria was annexed to the Third Reich in 1938, many existing institutions were transferred into the new system without complications or major alterations. Upon these institutions was the system of law enforcement and criminal prosecution, which means the entire complex of criminal law, law enforcement, and jurisdiction. When analyzing Nazi crimes against homosexuals in Austria, it is therefore indispensable to analyze the entire system of criminal prosecution and not just means of persecutions which the Nazi regime installed parallel to the regular system of prosecution, such as the Sondergerichte, the special courts, imprisonment in concentration camps, and other means of police power. Most of the research so far has been conducted on this parallel system of persecution. But women were, in general, as we heard already today, not marked in this system as homosexuals. In 1997 already, the Austrian political scientist Gudrun Hauer criticized the focus on the extermination in concentration camps when examining the persecution of homosexuals because it would be insufficient and distorting for the research of the situation of lesbian women. Her plea was repeated by Jens Dobler, the archivist of the Schwules Museum in Berlin, in 2012. It has found little resonance among historians. However, a wider focus, a new perspective, is indispensable in order to encompass the dimension of injustice which homosexual men and women suffered from under the Nazi regime. I presume that central aspects of the Nazi persecution as homosexuals are known, and it is not necessary to go into detail. And I was also asked to concentrate on my latest research. Before going into medias res, let me give you a brief overview of my presentation. First, I will sum up the state of historical research and on this topic and allocate my own research within this field. Then I will analyze the legal situation in Austria at the time when the Nazis came to power, including most important Supreme Court decisions. Thirdly, I will briefly describe measures which the Nazi regime installed in order to erase homosexuality, and will then present data regarding the intensity homosexuality was persecuted with in Vienna. I'm going to end my presentation with a conclusion and an outlook. The amount of historical documents concerning the regular criminal prosecution of homosexual acts at that time is enormous. In the course of the Queen Project, 636 court files just from the two Viennese county courts were digitalized. These are approximately 85% of all files regarding homosexuality which these two courts have originally produced. The volume of the files vary between a few up to more than 2,000 pages. More than 1,400 persons were accused. At least 79 of them were female. Five of them showed signs of an undiscerned gender identity. All files from the juvenile court have been destroyed, and the files from the military court still have to be counted and listed. Only little of this material has been examined so far regarding structural aspects of the persecution of female homosexuality. In the 1980s, a major project examined more than 2,000 court files on same-sex fornication from all over Austria from the 1930s to the 1950s. Results of this project were published only in one single article by Albert Müller and Christian Fleck. They stated that the amount of women in all of the historical documents which they have examined lies under 5% and classified the persecution of female homosexuality as marginal. In his recent article on homosexuality and criminal statistics in Austria, Hans-Peter Weingand referred to their results and came to the same conclusion on the basis of the data which he had examined. It has to be remarked critically that they all use an arithmetic average of their data and that these data derive from a period which spans longer than the Nazi rule in Austria. The Austrian historian Nico Wahl stated in his contribution to the report of the Austrian Historical Commission at the beginning of this millennium that measures which the Nazi regime introduced in the field of jurisdiction resulted in more sentences on grounds of same-sex fornication against women being suspended. But he does not present any statistical data. The leading expert on the persecution of female homosexuality by the Nazis, the German historian Claudia Schoppmann, has examined most of the court files from Vienna concerning female homosexuality, but she took a different perspective. Her focus lay on biographical data of women who were persecuted and less on structural aspects. In her dissertation, though, she analyzed Nazi politics against homosexual women. She came to the conclusion, which she repeated also later on, that the Nazi regime did not conduct a systematic persecution of female homosexuality. I do not object to her, however, I'm going to relativize Schoppmann's conclusion. Although the Nazi regime had obviously not planned to persecute female homosexuality as systematically as they persecuted male homosexuality, they did not change the Austrian law, which criminalized male as well as female homosexuality. Female homosexuality was systematically prosecuted in Austria already before the Nazis came to power. The question is, in what way the existing system was influenced or changed by the regime? I will provide evidence that measures which the Nazi regime introduced in order to fight male homosexuality had a severely negative systematic effect on the situation of lesbian women, at least in Vienna. The results of which historic research has brought forth so far have to be revised. But first, let me explain the legal situation in Austria at that time. Paragraph 129, cipher 1, letter B, of the Austrian Penal Code defined as a crime and not as an offense. Fornication against nature, this is with persons of the same sex. Paragraph 130 ordered the penalty to be between 1 and 5 years in regular cases. This law was introduced in 1852 and was obtained in this very wording until August 1971 and also during the Nazi period. As you can see, the wording did include women. the Supreme Court confirmed that in a decision from 1887 and reconstructed himself the history of the criminalization of female homosexuality. All the way back to the penal court of Emperor Charles V from 1532. Although there is well-grounded assumption among historians that this paragraph was factually not applied to women for about 35 years, female homosexuality was prosecuted again in Austria from 1887 onward. The concepts of female homosexuality, which prevailed among the jurisdiction, differed in many aspects from the concepts of male homosexuality, though the Supreme Court did not draft different elements of the crime of same-sex fornication for men and women. From a purely juridical point of view, the jurisdiction did not treat women differently to men because the differences in the concepts were not considered a question of law, but a question of nature, hence a question of facts. The wording of the law, fornication against nature with persons of the same sex, was very uncertain, hence leaving much space for interpretation. The Austrian Supreme Court emphasized on that at several times by stating that the term fornication has to be understood in its common meaning, in its natural meaning, or in its general linguistic usage. The entire field of jurisdiction, with the Supreme Court on top, made use of this leeway in decision-making. The case studies, which the Supreme Court published in the course of many decades before 1938, did not form a consistent picture of the elements of the crime of same-sex fornication, which was criticized by legal experts already back then. The jurisdiction of the Supreme Court provided only very few descriptions of concrete acts and kept the leeway for decision-making open by emphasizing more on the purpose of the act than on the act itself. Same-sex fornication was defined as an act between persons of the same sex with the purpose of achieving sexual arousal, desire, lust. Therefore, the legal situation for homosexual men and women in Austria at the time of the Anschluss was much stricter than the legal situation in Germany before 1935, when the Nazi regime enforced the law against homosexual men. Female homosexuality was not criminalized in Germany. Stricter laws and more rigorous law enforcement were most probably the reason why in the 1920s and 30s in Vienna or in any other Austrian city, no gay and or lesbian scene comparable to the scene in Berlin, for example, developed. However, when the Nazis came to power in Austria, this was not enough. Additional means of police power, like preventive confinement in concentration camps, as well as additional means of law enforcement, like the persecution of so-called dangerous habitual criminals by special courts, were introduced in order to eradicate homosexuality. And the Gestapo, with its special methods of investigation, was consigned with the persecution of homosexuals, at least until shortly before the war started. Then this agenda was taken over by the regular police again, which did not improve the situation of the persecuted. One of the measures which the Nazi regime took, especially for the persecution of homosexuals in the Ostmark, I would like to analyze closer, putting the focus on its effect on women. As in so many other cases, these historical events are evidence for the Third Reich being what Ernst Frankl called already in 1941 a prerogative state, because it shows how the executive branch took influence on the juridical branch by exerting political pressure. In October 1932, the Sixth Senate of the Supreme Court in Leipzig, who was by then the highest level of jurisdiction for the Ostmark, hence using Austrian law, found a man from Linz not guilty of having committed the crime of same-sex fornication because he had only touched another man's penis. According to the old jurisdiction of the Austrian Supreme Court, such an act did not suffice to find someone guilty on grounds of same-sex fornication. It would have needed, in addition, at least a masturbatory intention, which the court couldn't find in this case. The Supreme Court's decision stirred uproar at the uproar, and Der Stürmer, the Journal of the SS, published a polemic article on the lenient verdict. This article again stirred hectic reactions in the Ministry of Justice. Calling for more rigorous actions against homosexuals in Austria. They considered changing the law, but came to the conclusion that the Supreme Court would only need to change his interpretation of the law. This was finally achieved in June 1940, when the Sixth Senate of the Supreme Court had to deal with a similar case, this time from Vienna. The court ruled that from then on, the term fornication against nature, in paragraph 129.1b of the Austrian Penal Code, had to be interpreted in the same sense as the term fornication in paragraph 175 of the German Penal Code, as it was reformed by the Nazis in 1935. The alignment of the jurisdiction in Austria was first outlined by the German historian Günter Grau in 1993, and for a long time it was not clear what effects this alignment had on women in Austria, since German law did not criminalize female homosexuality. The historical documents which Grau has also published do not give any hint. I found proof that at least three women were convicted on grounds of same-sex fornication by the Viennese County Court No. 1 on the basis of this new interpretation. According to the former interpretation, they would not have been found guilty. From a legal point of view, this is significant because it proves that the Nazi-specific measure for the persecution of homosexuality was also applied in order to prosecute women. Whether it was intended by the regime or not, lesbian women suffered severely and systematically from the Nazi persecution of homosexuality, at least in Vienna. Finally, I would like to present data which give an impression of the intensity homosexuality was persecuted with in Vienna at the time of the Nazi regime. Conventional criminal statistics present data of criminal convictions. They focus on persons who were convicted of having committed a crime. Instead, I want to focus on the amount of efforts which were put into the prosecution of the crime of same-sex fornication, because I want to find out at which intensity that this crime was prosecuted with by the authorities in Vienna. For this purpose, I've examined the main register of the Viennese County Court No. 1. This register contains all records of all persons who were prosecuted by this court, no matter what the outcome was. A similar analysis of the main register of the Viennese County Court No. 2 was not possible because it does not contain records on the criminal charges. However, most of the crimes which were committed in Vienna were prosecuted by the Viennese County Court No. 1 anyway. The main register of a court provides data of all efforts which this court put into the prosecution of crimes and offenses. The data might be very abstract, nevertheless, they are encompassing and complete, especially compared to court files which have been destroyed to some extent. I'm going to present data on the period from 1932 to 1945 in order to give a basis of comparison. Only by comparison to the years prior to the Anschluss, it is possible to tell whether the Nazi regime had an influence on the juridical sector. When putting the number of court cases on grounds of same-sex fornication, the orange line below, in direct relation to all court cases which were conducted at the Viennese County Court No. 1, the blue line above, the crime of same-sex fornication seems to have been of marginal interest for the court. However, when taking a closer look, the orange line seems to run almost anticyclical to the blue line. In order to make this development more visible, I calculated the relative share of court cases on grounds of same-sex fornication in percent and put the numbers in a separate diagram. we can see that the intensity of the crime of same-sex fornication was prosecuted with by the Viennese County Court No. 1 almost doubled when the Nazis came to power in Austria and stayed at a higher level than before throughout their government. The next diagram shows how the number of persons who were charged with the crime of same-sex fornication developed between 1932 and 1941. The blue line shows the number of men, the orange line shows the number of women. The sharp decrease of the blue line from 1939 to 1940 can be explained with the beginning of the war. Most of the young men were enlisted in the army and further on subordinated to military jurisdiction. More interesting, in my view, is the development of the orange line. The number of women tripled from 1938 to 1939 and reached its height in 1941 with an all-time high. I have also calculated the relative share of women in percent and put the numbers in a separate diagram. Between 1932 and 1938, the numbers developed with a decreasing tendency. Between 38 and 41, however, they grew constantly, reached a height of almost 15% in 1941, stayed at a high level in 42, and then decreased. The height of the relative share cannot solely be explained with the decrease of the number of men, because also the absolute number of women reached its height at the same time. We can see a statistically significant increase of the intensity women were prosecuted with on charges of same-sex fornication in Vienna at the time of the Nazi regime. What are my conclusions? Firstly, a profound law historical analysis of measures which the Nazi regime took in the field of jurisdiction in the Ostmark, aiming to eradicate homosexuality, shows that these measures have had a severe and systematic effect on the prosecution of female homosexuality. Secondly, the statistical analysis of the main register of the Viennese County Court No. 1 shows that measures of the Nazi regime had a statistically significant negative effect on the intensity women were prosecuted with on charges of same-sex fornication. At the end of my presentation, allow me to point out future prospects of this field of research. A wider focus on the persecution of homosexuals by the Nazi regime in Austria. I'm recurring to my introducing reflections. There's another consequence for future research. It also raises the question what was kept or left over from the measures which the regime introduced in order to raise homosexuality. Means of persecution, which were installed parallel to the regular system of criminal prosecution, were revoked after Austria became independent again in 1945. However, the question must be raised whether the entire system of criminal prosecution went back to the status quo ex ante. In my presentation, I shed light on some of the alterations and transformations the Nazi regime implemented within the system of criminal prosecution. Statistical data of sentencings on grounds of same-sex fornication in Austria, which Hans-Peter Weingart published recently, showed that already in the 1950s, condemnatory sentences surmounted the figures from the Nazi period. We still need to find out to what extent the persecution of homosexual men and women in Austria between 1945 and 1971 was influenced by a mindset which was introduced by the Nazi regime. 1945 does not seem to have been a clear cut, at least not for gays and lesbians. Thank you for your attention.
Calculé pour 20 minutes. Hein. Je vois ce que ça va suivre. Donc, la prochaine intervenante n'est pas Madame Judith Takacs, qui est absente. Elle ne pourrait pas venir, mais elle a demandé à une collègue de faire sa présentation, qui sera aussi 20 minutes. Sa collègue, elle s'appelle Piroska Nagy. Piroska, vous avez
je suis la voix de Judith.
Ah, I would prefer to stay here. Je vais rester ici parce que j'ai l'écran. So, it's about Hungary. So there is very limited information available on gay and lesbian lives during the Second World War in Hungary. However, we can report on at least some components of the increasingly visible homosexual subculture from before the Second World War. I will speak about the male homosexuals only and in the larger framework of the identification of homosexual males in Budapest from the 1920s to the period of the war, which was necessary to prosecute them or to do something with them during the war. Regarding the legal background, it's important to point out that between 1878 and 1961, male homosexual behavior was criminalized under the category of unnatural fornication. Consensual same-sex relationships were considered to be milder crimes and punishable with a maximum 1 year imprisonment, while the coerced forms carried terms up to 5 years. As you will see, since at least the early 1920s, official and or semi-official lists of homosexuals have been compiled in Budapest, and this points to the fact that the same-sex desires have been socially recognized and at the same time in some way misrecognized already during the first half of the 20th century. The very scarce records concerning their becoming during the Second World War would not exist without this prehistory of the listing of male homosexuals, either in criminal or in medical context. By the 1930s, Budapest became a spatially ordered modern city, which was characterized by specialized uses of public space, serving mainly the interest of the upper middle classes. While for most urbanite meeting, cultural and biographical strangers coming from previously separate real and symbolic worlds is merely an unavoidable concomitant of living in a modern city, for homosexuals, life for homosexual lives, the emergence of the unique social psychological space of the public realm provides a previously unknown dynamic. In big cities like Budapest, with established meeting places and patterns of decodable behavior, same-sex attracted people could submerge in the world of strangers and could try to act as a homosexual, not only just being one. In 1926, one of the first books was published in Hungarian that was fully devoted to the modern aspects of homosexual problem, recurring suddenly after the First World War as a mass phenomenon and as a burning issue of the modern era that cannot be ignored in Hungary either. The rapid expansion of homosexual life, I quote, the great homosexual tide flooding Budapest, quote, so end of quote, was presented as an inherent feature of world-scale urbanization. In the author's estimate, by the 1920s, the number of awnings was over 10,000 in Budapest. They had several meetings, venues to meet and interact, including bathhouses and vapor baths, and inner city locations, which most of which would remain popular areas for several decades. In 1929, a group of journalists and police officers published a two-volume work on modern criminality, where the authors, following the etiology of Krafft-Ebing, distinguished between acquired and inborn forms of homosexuality, describing the those who had an acquired homosexuality as not having the unexplainable skill, as they say, with which they are able to recognize each other. So they wrongly pursued normal men who would naturally repulse, once again a quote, or even report them to the police. So these unsuccessful attempts bring them to those well-known places where the pathologically inclined homosexual gather, as they say. And these are the places I have just quoted before. So baths, public toilets, parks, and some others. So in 1933, a practicing doctor of the Royal Hungarian Public Health Institute published a study devoted to the issue of homosexual male prostitution. His Hungarian data source was a secret police file of 1932 containing a list of 1,695 male homosexual prostitutes. In 1934, Zoltán Nemes Nagy, a Hungarian psychiatrist and neurologist, devoted a whole chapter of his sexual pathological studies to homosexuals in Budapest. He emphasizes that the Hungarian capital was the first metropolitan city in the whole world, I quote, where semi-official records had been compiled on homosexuals for about 15 years. Thus, Budapest police had data on about 5,000 men, including, I quote, mainly passive homosexuals and those who commit unnatural fornication for material interest, end of quote. The collected data included the following elements: name, place and date of birth, religious affiliation, marital status, occupation, address, place apprehended, nationality, knowledge of languages, inclination, company, hate, ways of speaking, and and all the physical description, special distinguishing marks, previous criminal records, as well as three photographs. The authors estimated the real number of homosexual men in Budapest being about 15,000, most of whom would never be detected as they belong to, I quote, upscale circles, carefully trying to avoid publicity and any kind of scandal leading to the police. Now, during the war, we have really a few data only. Recently, a document from 1942 was recovered in the Hungarian war archives, contributing to the still very, very scarce historical evidence that during the Second World War, homosexuals were also targets of life-threatening state control in Hungary. It is a list of altogether 993 alleged homosexuals that was annexed to the correspondence between the State Security Center and the Ministry of Defense, contemplating the possibility whether or not to use them as forced laborers within the wartime labor service system. The wartime labor service system was a special phenomenon of the Horthy regime. This is the period named after Miklós Horthy, regent of the Hungarian kingdom between 1920 and 44. So the obligation of home defense related labor service was originally introduced by Act No. 2 of 1939 on home defense. The aim of the wartime labor service system was to keep the politically unreliable elements of society, primarily Jews, but also communists and members of non-Hungarian ethnic groups, away from armed military service, and at the same time to force them to take part in the war effort. This is how the unarmed home defense labor service came into being, leading to the death of thousands of forced laborers who were sent to the front lines without sufficient equipment and supplies. The correspondence, consisting of altogether four letters and two attached lists, started on November 7 of 1942 with a proposal on behalf of the State Security Service addressing the Minister of Defense as follows: please call up into the Home Defense Labor Service the homosexual individuals being unreliable regarding public morality located within the territory of the capital, Budapest, listed in the attached register. Please inform us about your Honor's decision. On the same day, the request of the State Security Center was sent out for internal discussion also in the Ministry of Defense. This letter stated that the Ministry of Home Affairs, more precisely the State Security Center, requests that officially registered homosexuals, being residents of Budapest, should be called up into the Home Defense Labor Service. In its response to the request, the Department of Military Organization and Mobilization submitted the following arguments. According to the Act No. 2 of 1939, suitable individuals on the basis of their occupation or education can be employed for home defense labor. Everyone should be employed in the best possible way to serve the interest of home defense. Thus, there is no legal possibility to mobilize these homosexual people for home defense labor service. This is a first response. The department also considered the possibility of mobilizing them for military service. This is also the same letter speaking. By taking into consideration that previously socially harmful individuals, prisoners, internees, were divided into two groups. Those who are reliable and those who are unreliable regarding their national loyalties. Those in the first group were assigned to active service, while the others were used in special labor companies. However, in the view of the department, these people cannot be categorized as unreliable regarding their national loyalties. Therefore, they should be assigned to active military service, which is by no means, the text continues, a desirable solution. So I skip a bit of the text. It was also added that there was an increasing tendency to offer as the scum of the population for military use, while these procedures would hurt the feelings of those other impeccable individuals who participate in the war when they see that the military service gains a primarily punitive character. Additionally, one officer made the following note in handwriting: it is undoubtedly useful if mainly the nationally useless elements decay. Another lieutenant referred in a handwritten comment to the possibility of collecting homosexuals into special labor force companies and employing them outside the country's borders. However, in this case, they would get into the same category than those being unreliable regarding their national loyalties. So the question emerges, would it be useful to make all these men meet and get to know each other more closely? I certainly wouldn't advise that. Nevertheless, on November 11th, also 1942, another short letter arrived from the State Security Center addressed to the Minister of Defense requesting similar treatment for additional 184 men added to those alleged homosexuals of Budapest, whose data had already been sent on November 7th. The two lists consisted of data for altogether 993 men, including their name, place and date of birth, religious denomination, family status, occupation, first name of father, mother's name, address. So they were well known. Most of these men were in their late 20s, worked as manual laborers, farmhands or in commerce. There were only very few intellectuals and artists among them, like 3 actors, 8 musicians, and only 1 journalist. 29 of the 993 men were married, 46 had been illegitimate children, and 37 had their address given in a prison. Regarding religious affiliation, there was a great majority of Roman Catholics, 629, 167 Jews, second religion, 172 Calvinists, and then a few evangelics and Greek Catholics. These numbers are in line, in fact, with the division of denominations in the population of Budapest in the early 1940s. It is a matter of concern that the origin of these lists cannot be established. It can be supposed, however, that they came from police files. The phrase "officially registered homosexuals" used in the correspondence supports this supposition. The final item of this correspondence, as far as it has come to light, is a possibly draft reply of December 3, 1942, from the Minister of Defense, addressed to the Minister of Home Affairs, stating, "I have no means to follow your Honor's recommendation to take these homosexual individuals into military service." And then the documentation stops, which means that there is no way to know exactly what happened to them. So far, these are the only known documents that can provide a link between the history of homosexuality in Hungary and the Holocaust, and this link is not a very strong one. At present, beside archived documents on criminal court cases, there is no historical data available to find out what happened exactly in Hungary during the 1940s to alleged homosexuals in general, and these 993 listed men from Budapest in particular. The only exception is a journalist, the only journalist of the list. In fact, he was the only journalist listed, and I succeeded, Judith succeeded, in tracing him in several documents of the historical archives of the Hungarian State Security, a bit later. Perhaps surprisingly, he appears in the secret police files as a source who was recruited to become a police informer in 1959. His main job was to report on his journalist colleagues and Western contacts from Vienna, which job he has fulfilled with varying success until he defected in 1973 and settled in Australia. However, this is at least partly a different story which should be told when we want to discuss how people could be convinced and forced to become police informers during state socialism. Thank you for your attention.